There's a huge conversation going on right now. There's documentaries out there that have been discussing this sudden adult death syndrome and the discussion of coroners and things out there. I have no desire. I'm glad there are multiple groups and multiple organizations that are doing investigations. But many of you have asked, where's the high wire ad on this? And we've been working for several months, actually, on trying to get to the bottom of this. And that is what I'm about to involve you in. And some of this is brand new information that's just coming into me today because of this. But what drove this is there are several headlines that we've been reporting on through the last couple of years and tweets and things that I know we're all discussing. This is just what some of those look like. Here's how graphene oxide in all of COVID vaccines is slowly killing the vaccinated. That's one article that was in NutraTruth. Scientists worldwide claim all COVID-19 vaccines contain nanotechnology and graphene oxide. That was in the expose. Here's one of the parasites. There it is, found in the Moderna vax, analyzed under microscopy. Observed it lift itself off the glass and moved on its own. These are all shocking statements. Some of these, you know, we've addressed here and others we haven't. Part of it is I really don't like addressing something that I don't know where the information is coming from. If you watched our show long enough, I do not trust experts just because they tell me they're an expert. I want to see the science. I want to see the evidence. I want to see how it's done. I don't trust Tony Fauci just because he's Tony Fauci, you know, and in some ways that's worked really well for me in predicting where we now find ourselves at over these last couple of years. But when it came to these conversations, and many of you come up to me and talk about it, I will be honest with you. I am struggling with these headlines. I'm struggling. We've even had people come on and discuss graphene oxide a little bit and talk about these amoebas or aliens or whatever, you know, but I got to the point where I was like, I'm sorry, I love everybody out there, but I'm going to have to see this with my own eyes. And so I reached out to Dr. Ryan Cole, a pathologist who has proved to me that he's impeccable in the work that he does, unbiased. And I said, would you do me a favor? Can we get a hold of these vaccines? And I want to come into the laboratory. I don't want you doing it. I want to be standing there. I want to see it with my own eyes. Can we bring some cameras in and really do a real investigation? Because I want to know what the truth is. So what we are about to do is break what we found in this investigation inside of Dr. Ryan Cole's laboratory. Let's get started, shall we? Today, I'm at Cole Diagnostics. This is Dr. Ryan Cole's laboratory. Of course, we've had him on speaking as a pathologist on many of the issues around the COVID vaccine. I want to see it with my own eyes, and Dr. Ryan Cole is going to give me that opportunity. So let's go in and see what this lab's all about. Right, Dr. Ryan Cole, hey, brother. Good to see you, man.
Great to have you in Idaho, my friend.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Welcome to Cole Diagnostics. Welcome to the lab. Let's do a quick tour and do some science.
All right, sounds good. See what you got going on.
All righty. So this is where the magic begins. This is where all the specimens roll in. Blood, microbiology, molecular biology, biopsies, you name it, we do it. Early on in COVID, the hospitals were lagging and struggling. As you remember, the big labs early on is where everything was going, but it was taking too long. Right. So we started early and tried to ramp up for helping the community. This is kind of the sports car of amplifiers, okay, in terms of being able to take a lot of patients and throughput continuously as well. Over here is kind of the heart of the lab. Here on the architect, we do all the different chemistries and thyroid panels and you name it. That machine pretty much is the workhorse. On this side, we do the tissue processing. And here at the microtome and this water bath, they cut the slides into thin 4/1000ths of an inch sections. And that's what comes to my desk each day, is the biopsy slides.
You are a pathologist for decades now. How many years?
26 years.
Have you seen anything that resembles these types of clots before?
No.
Never?
From around the country, from coroners and embalmers, I have received some samples and specimens from, unfortunately, the patients that have not made it.
Okay.
Now, me personally, I've done about 550 autopsies. And when you do an autopsy, yeah, the blood congeals, but it tends to be red and jelly-like and soft. almost like jello. But these have been coming out of individuals' bodies at the time of embalming, blocking, you know, large stretches of vessels in the arm or the leg or in the lungs, or I have some coming from a surgeon in another state who has been removing these huge rubbery carotid plaques. And so the normal composition of a clot should be fibrin, platelets, some trapped white blood cells and whatnot. These are firm and rubbery. You know, patients do form deep vein clots, but the consistency of those clots is different than this. They're not white like this. They're not firm and rubbery. They're not, you know, if we pull these out and put gloves on and squish them, they bounce back.
And obviously coroners do this all the time.
They do, and that's...
They're sending this out because something's bothering them.
Something's right? bothering them. So this is what I would normally see at autopsy. You know, some red cells, some trapped white blood cells within the middle. Yeah, that's a normal postmortem clot there. A little bit of kind of that magenta in the background, that would be fibrin strands. But what you don't see is just thick casts of all fibrin. It should be mixed elements. See kind of that greenish-bluish glow. So that's true beta-pleated amyloid. So that's a special type of a protein congealing. But if I go and I look at the clots themselves, haven't had that same glow to them. And I've looked at about 20 of them with this Congo red stain. My next step is spike protein stains on all of these to see, is there spike protein deposited in those protein sheets? But like this entire, you know, this is one of those spaghetti strands, and it's just one long line of protein just congealed together. That was one giant clot that came out of a vaccinated woman, and it came out in the shape of the inside of the uterus. And I've talked to OBs left and right that are seeing this. The sad thing is, it just takes that much of a blockage in a medium-sized vessel to now you can't get red blood cells past that, you can't get oxygen past that. You get a heart attack, you get a stroke, you get infarct your lung, you infarct another organ. You can't perfuse around this.
Is that thick? Is it that
that's
wide?
Wide, yeah. This type of clot, it's different in consistency, color, size. It's just a completely different consistency. And have I seen clots 500,000 patients later? You bet I've seen clots.
Yeah.
Clots like this now. And talking to other colleagues, other pathologists, hey, have you seen these? No. Coroners? No. This isn't normal, folks. There's nothing normal about this.
In some ways, it's nothing short of a horror movie, but to get to the bottom of how this story is being written, what's really going on here, it's my honor and pleasure to be joined by Dr. Ryan Cole.
Del, good to see you.
I just want to thank you. We have worked hard to get you here for this. You are a very busy man. I mean, not only do you do this incredible work you're doing, you are flying all over the world trying to spread the truth, you know, as I am. We are trying to wake up every single soul on this planet that we can. We're in a crisis.
We are.
It seems. And you were at the event. Let's just for a moment reflect on that event.
That yesterday. Event was phenomenal. And I talked to a lot of people around the world, and they congratulated Senator Johnson for his seeking of truth and allowing, you know, all doctors agree when you censor the ones who don't. So mm-hmm. to have those who are such brilliant minds and scientists together in one room, it was such an honor. And it was such a feeling of, this is truth coming forward in a way it should. And this is the dialogue all of society should have been able to have all along. Yeah. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah. We're here. We spent, you know, some time in your laboratory. Let's sort of begin with these clots. And I'm going to be clear right now. I think we get sometimes there's sensationalization around
Absolutely.
These conversations. And we are in a sensational time. And we looked at all the things we just talked about. in our sort of hot headlines section. But I don't want to be sensational about this. I really want to get down to what we can and cannot prove, what is and isn't. And it's what we said yesterday, actually, behind the scenes when I was sitting with all of the doctors and scientists that were going to speak. I said, we're all at different levels of what's going on here. What this event needs to be is simply what we can prove. I don't want to hear that we believe it's a bioweapon or that we believe that people are being killed on purpose or any of that. That's speculation. Doesn't matter how much it looks like it adds up. This is science. This is science right now. And though behind closed doors we can have theories and discuss them, when it comes to going to the public should only be really aware of what the scientists can prove. And that's what we're focused on right now.
Right. And in science, what we know is the tip of the iceberg. Even what we're discovering now, it's still the tip.
Right.
And there's so much more to learn.
Right.
And it's that willingness to look for it, but it's also the ability and or the permission to do so. Now, good science, usually all the great discoveries are accidental. But when you suppress the ability of scientists to look, you'll never find.
Right. And to put out information. And what's really, I think, damaging right now, the scientific method is gone up in flames. But even these papers where we're seeing retractions all the time, that just, it goes against what science is supposed to be. If people have issues with something printed, those papers used to have that argument. If you have something against this paper, please state it, write it out. And then someone else would weigh in. And this is how science, and in the end, sometimes like, you know what, you were wrong. And it would sit there standing the test of time saying, yeah, I was wrong and I got to look like an you know, an idiot for the rest of my career because that doesn't get taken down. Enough scientists beat on my hypothesis or my discovery that it didn't hold up. This idea that before it even gets to the debate is being taken down.
Right.
Is really, really, it's the end of science if we continue to allow this to happen.
And you bring up a great point because real science should always involve humility and the willingness to say it's not about my ego, it's about an issue and we're trying to get to the best scientific truth we can with the methods we have now. And obviously science advances, but it is super frustrating to have very good science in the literature being pulled for no good reason.
So let's get into these blood clots for a moment. And it's these post-mortem blood clots. And we've seen these around. If people have been, watching it sort of all over the internet. Someone said to me yesterday, that was at the panel, I won't say who, but they said a relative passed away. And the coroner or somebody said to them, well, I know they weren't vaccinated. And they said, how do you know that? Like, because they were easy to embalm. They didn't have any blocked arteries. Now, that's a pretty outrageous statement. I'm not going to put that on the embalmers, people that you're working with. But what is happening, and the reason these clots have come to attention, is it's these embalmers that are trying to just fill the blood vessels with all the fluid to embalm, and is not going through. Right? It's getting
Correct.
Blocked and stuck. And like, what's in there? And they're pulling these things out of veins and arteries all over their body. Is that essentially what's
Correct.
Going on?
And what's interesting, you'll hear coroners say, well, we're not seeing this. Well, when we do an autopsy, the coroner, the pathologist, we're usually doing, a brain exam, a chest cavity exam, but they don't usually do the periphery. So they're not generally, dissecting out those veins and arteries that the embalmers use.
Okay.
So why aren't they seeing them per se? We are seeing them under the microscope. They're just not maybe seeing the giant ones that the embalmers are. And it is unusual. And when did it begin to happen? Well, after the rollout of an experimental injection. And you can tell at autopsy, we do see clots, but they're post-mortem clots, and they're jelly-like. They're not firm-like, these ones, and we'll kind of go into,
Let's get into the slides. You have a bunch of slides to take us through. So first, I think we start with this idea of spike protein in the cells, right?
And to be honest, I mean, at the beginning of the day, COVID was clotting disease.
Okay.
COVID itself, the spike protein from COVID, caused clotting.
Right.
But that spike protein, this injection we used, that gene sequence makes your body make that spike protein. Well, we know from countless studies we'll get to that the spike protein is excellent at inducing an unusual pathway of clotting. So we'll kind of get to this
clear, the virus itself can clot, but as you said yesterday and many sort of backed up, they brag that the body's creating more spike protein through injection
for
than
a
it
long
is through
period
a viral
of time.
Load for a long period of time. And there's also been a manipulation of this spike protein. We've gotten to some of that science here, but to make it last longer than it would naturally on its own.
Correct.
And now we don't know how long it lasts, you know, biopersistence and all of these things
came those,
up in
those
the
very concerning
yesterday.
Things. Yeah. How long does it last? And what is the persistence of a sequence in your body making a toxic protein going to do over time?
Right.
So I guess we'll dive into the pictures
Let's
and,
do it. Let's
and
do
show
it.
Some of
Take
those.
Me through this.
Okie dokie. So this is, you know, the vaccine, little lipid nanoparticle, has a gene sequence, goes into your cell expresses protein, and then your body makes an antibody to that cell. And then in the laboratory, now a cell that may have that spike protein in it or on its surface will make a little tag antibody that will bind to it, and then we make it glow with different chromogens. And so here—
So you get kind of a dye that when it sees spike protein, it lights
binds,
up.
It binds and then
binds.
It lights up. Exactly.
Okay.
So that's how we can tell it's there,
okay.
Present or not present. We can do this with thousands of different proteins in the human body.
Okay, great.
Okay, so here we go. You know, you were told this is an overlay of a needle going into a muscle, and you see that little circle is a venule. And you're told the needle goes in your arm, the shot stays in your arm, good to go, right?
Right.
However, there's tears in all these little microvessels. And we know good technique wasn't used, aspiration of the plunger wasn't done. So now this lipid nanoparticle doesn't just go where it's injected, it goes into a pressurized blood system. And here's deltoid muscle, there's that dye, you see all those dots.
So those dots. We're looking at the brown spots?
The brown spots.
The brown is what the spike
Yeah, those
protein
are all
is.
Our muscle cells with spike protein
okay.
in it. That's what, you know, that should be there if their technology is doing what they said it was going
right.
to do.
Great,
however,
that's where you want it,
yeah.
your deltoid.
Right, okay. However, we'll go forward here. Well, here's periappendicitis, inflammation of the appendix. Let's look at the next slide. See all those little brown dots? I'll be darned. That spike protein in the appendix. Well, how did that get there?
Right.
Well, because that lipid goes everywhere, and then that S1 fragment of the spike and the spike itself can circulate for a long time.
So let's hit this really quick. Let's pull out from this slide just to get this clear. You have this sort of lipid nanoparticle
mm-hmm.
that was really designed, and you said this, and just to be clear, it was designed to cross the blood-brain barrier so they could deliver chemotherapy to people that had brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So this product was made to get outside of the system it's injected to
and
get
go
to the hardest
everywhere.
Place to get
to. Get to the hardest places,
the brain
yes.
that's usually protected from outside elements. And so when they wrapped this spike protein or this, you know, this mRNA technology in this lipid nanoparticle and told you it's going to stay in the arm, that defies all reason because the product itself was made to do exactly the opposite of that, which is not stay in the arm, to get everywhere throughout your body, including your brain.
We have 20 years of papers in the literature looking at this delivery device. They knew what it was going to do and where it could go.
Wow. Okay. All right, let's get back to the slides.
All right. So here, another patient, spike protein in the bronchioles. So this is, again, just over and over I'm going to show you.
Yes.
Spike protein, dots, spike protein, again, bronchioles. It's and just this is a foreign body reaction to some of the inflammation and the cholesterol that breaks off walls. We'll skip to the next one.
Okay.
Skip that one, please. Skip that one. Okay. This is the brain.
Okay.
And that is all that blue dot is basically the brain being gobbled up to mush. That's inflammation just destroying the tissues of the brain.
We'll so everywhere there's those little dark dots.
That's an inflammatory
that
cell. That's a white blood cell reacting to something. Well, what's it reacting to?
Okay.
Let's jump forward. That's what it's reacting to. That is spike protein deposited in the tissues of the brain. Does spike protein belong
so this,
in the
I'm
brain?
So this, I'm assuming if we're looking at this, this is a person that has not survived. Is it
the yes,
issue?
These are sadly, and this is honoring the dead and letting them speak from, you know, the experience they had, and they're speaking from the other side saying to us, do the science and honor what we, you know, went through.
Right.
I mean, and this is really honoring others. There's a blood vessel in all those brown dots. That's the blood vessels inside the brain, but you can see the brown dots outside the blood vessel.
Yeah.
And again, like you mentioned, blood-brain barrier, sacred in the human body. And these are going across that barrier, and some of those lipid nanoparticles are going into the supportive cells, the oligodendrocytes, replicating in your own cells, inducing other inflammatory cells to come in. Who's heard of brain fog after an injection,
right.
or even after COVID? That spike protein will induce all that inflammation, and now those neural pathways aren't firing at their normal rates.
Right.
So that spike protein goes everywhere. That lipid nanoparticle goes everywhere. And then it induces so much inflammation in the body to the degree that it can cause these sudden deaths. And I know we'll get into the clots in a second here, too.
Let's do it. Let's keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling here. Let's see. What do we have next? Okay. This is the lining of a blood vessel.
Okay.
And that whole rim of brown is all spike protein. So if nothing else, it causes inflammation of the blood vessels, potentially throughout the entire body. Now, once you have that inflammation on the lining of the vessels, now it starts to trigger stickiness in cells, be it your platelets, your red cells, your white cells. Next one, please. Same, next. This is in the lungs. And see those big tubes, those long snaky things, those are the clots that we're talking about. And all that brown dot within that, that brown dotting is spike protein in the middle of these clots. Now these are, you know, medium-sized vessels in the lungs, but you have a clot in your leg that gets thrown up to your lungs and now it fragments and plugs your lungs vessels. Now you can't breathe.
Wow.
So that's spike protein. There's a close-up showing that brown dotting within that clotting material. And again, that spike protein will induce this. And we'll go on to the next one, just slide after slide after slide, you can see what this is doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, so now let's get into the clot, the actual clots themselves. Or was that, did we just see them? I forget, is there more? I
think
we cut
some out. The clots, we have some, overall gross picture. That was all microscopy under the microscope. But I think we do have some of the big, you know, there we go. So this is a patient, she's still alive.
Okay.
And this is interesting. A colleague in Germany sent me this. And she got three shots and would get pain in her fingers and toes. It's called Raynaud's phenomenon. Whenever the temp would drop below 72 Fahrenheit. And they drew her blood and setting it on the desk, fibrils started forming. And they spun it down and then this big glob formed. And so this was analyzed and it's unusual proteins. And this is what the spike protein is doing. It's inducing clotting pathways that can bypass normal ones. Here you see on the left, this is also taken from a living patient, thankfully. So when the critique comes that says, well, you know, these are post-mortem clots and it's only happening after death. No, this is happening in living patients.
Well, I think about this, and again, it's anecdotal, I don't even know, but like Al Roker, we're seeing these news headlines of people going in having clots taken out all over their body. I'm not saying he got the vaccine, I don't know. But under the current climate, it makes you ask this question as we're looking, is this just being caught ahead of time versus it hasn't killed someone yet? Hopefully they're able to stop it. But there's a lot of stories like that. What is this clot made of? I mean, so it's fibrin. I mean, you said usually there's more blood involved, but it's white like this.
Right.
They're pulling it out of veins. It's the exact same shape as the vein, as though I took caulk and filled a vein. It's filling it in and then just stays in that
right.
shape.
Right, and that's what they look like. And so here you see some of these thick, elastic clots. And they do have normal blood elements. And what's unusual is this one on the right, because that's from an artery. That is a long artery clot. Not a vein clot, an artery clot. So they will have red blood cells and white blood cells and fibrin trapped in them. But additionally, there's this proteinaceous material and some sugars too. And there's some studies that suggest the higher your blood sugar, the worse you do. It makes your blood stickier. Our blood cells have glycoproteins.
Right.
on them. So your blood group, you know, O, A, B, whatever it is, it's a different sugar on the surface of your cells. And so because of different blood types, you may, and your blood sugar chronically over time, you may have a higher propensity to form some of these clots. But it's this protein material. It's this thick, really dense, folded protein that's hard to break down. Now you can break down a normal clot. There's anti-clotting medicines that have been used for many years and new ones that have come out. And there's some supplements that work as well for breaking down clots. But this type of material, it's an amyloid-like material. And Dr. Pretorius out of South Africa, and I've communicated with her a couple of times, and she's fantastic. And she's done a lot of the really forward-thinking, focused on just this area. And she's proven the makeup of these. And she's found these in post-COVID patients, post long haul patients, post vaccine patients, and she's characterized it in the medical literature very well. And we're continuing to study the mechanisms as to why, and she has these great little microtube studies where she watches them form. And you can take platelets out. Here's one of Dr. Pretorius's paper. Okay. You can, and so, you know, the platelets are the microscopic band-aids in your bloodstream, and they'll form these little patches so you don't leak your blood out. And so she took these studies and took platelets out and put that spike protein in, and the protein still glommed together, even in the absence of platelets.
So we would assume the platelets are what are binding. She removed platelets from the blood, mm-hmm. still put the spike in
right.
there, and found that it's able to build proteins. Well, is it almost like upon itself? Or what
yeah,
is it?
It's like, you know, an Erector set or Legos, and you just keep sticking one to the next, to the next, to the next, but it's a pretty strong protein bond, and it's just tough to break these apart. And so the body's normal mechanisms for breaking things apart doesn't appear to be able to do this. And we've known this for a long time in medicine. Amyloid is a very concerning condition in medicine, and there's other medical conditions that can cause amyloid deposition. Tumors and lesions will cause certain abnormal proteins to build up. There's specific ones that will cause an amyloid-like protein to form, but this is rare, it's not common. And so these clots, and to see them at this rate, especially after a certain program rolled out with an experimental gene and a lipid nanoparticle, et cetera, all of a sudden we're seeing something we haven't seen before,
right.
That's scientifically very concerning and should be looked into even more. Like I said, we know the tip of the iceberg. We're still working on more mechanisms and understanding more of the makeup of these things.
Are you under any impression, because I know you're in the middle of this, that the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, clearly, this is a problem being seen around the world. Independent scientists around the world are looking into it. Are our regulatory agencies that have sort of supported this vaccine, are we aware of any studies going on right now looking at this
crickets.
Really alarming problem?
Crickets. No, crickets. Where's the funding? As many billions as we have spent to different companies and agencies to advertise, get a shot, those same billions should be going into the research.
Yeah.
And you're right, I've been overseas quite a few times this year, talked to colleagues, they're seeing it, morticians overseas, they're seeing it. So it's not just here and just a couple of labs, and a lot of morticians have been seeing it, but they want their job, and so they're staying quiet, but they're sharing material and information.
All right, well, you know, as promised, part of, you know, behind all of this, we do know that COVID, the virus itself, and the spike protein are capable of these things, but what's actually in the vaccines? Dr. Ryan Cole was able to secure Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Moderna vaccines so that we could take a look at them. Let's take a look at what we found.
We're going to go to the microbiology lab, and we have a clean HEPA-filtered hood in there that's sterile, and we'll pop the vaccine vials under that hood, go ahead and put some of the contents on the slides, cover slip them, and then you and I can look at them under the microscope.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to set these aside and let them thaw, and we will go grab the J&J. I have those in my office.
Okay.
Because those are kept at room temp.
Great. So this is Johnson & Johnson.
Yep. Right now we're on to about 2000x magnification. See, there's our little wigglers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just typical. That's just fluid flowing. There's an electrostatic charge when you get down to particles that small.
What about this hairy looking thing there?
That's a really good question. When you ramp something up this fast, you know, how much debris do you get in the manufacturing process? And that's a good question. Is it, you know, gasket debris? See, that looks like a glass shard to me. Yeah.
So, like, I get we're looking at, like, at a microscopic level, but I don't want shards of glass moving
right,
through my bloodstream
right.
and my heart and everything else.
How pure are these? There's no guarantee. And I know from, you know, Japan rejecting, you know, millions of Moderna vials, impure. These are ramped up at warp speed. We know usually it takes many years to get a drug product safely to market with pure manufacturing. We look earlier last year in 21, the European Medicines Agency, you know, they were getting vials that were only 50-55% pure. So you're getting fragmented RNA instead of the full sequence, you know, to make whatever it's supposed to be making. Do you want a pure product in your body or not? So you saw we did that under a laminar flow hood, HEPA filtered, so a very clean environment. But even by the time that I brought those slides to here, you saw there was some dust particles on the cover slip.
Yes.
So when one's doing microscopy of certain types, that's why you have to be very careful and then know what you're looking at without jumping, you know, to conclusions that may be, you know, off the beaten track. And that
is that like one of the, you know, adenovirus
that breakers? Probably contains thousands of particles of adenovirus just
really?
In that one little, well, maybe hundreds. Maybe hundreds, just in that one little floating particle going by, you know, that's the carrier. Per J&J's application to the FDA, there's trace human protein, trace human DNA.
And now those proteins, that would be aborted
fetal cell fragments, yeah. And if I put my protein in you, you're gonna have an immunologic reaction to that because proteins from different people are immunogenic in other people. And that's why when you go to the blood bank, they're trying to match as perfectly as possible your blood to someone else's blood, because blood cells even have tons of different proteins on their surface, red blood cells. So you have to match protein group to protein. There's knowingly traced proteins that can be immunogenic, causing an immunologic reaction.
Yeah.
Let's take a peek at Moderna here. Interesting, some of those particles are a little more elongated. Those should be the lipids containing, you know, thousands upon thousands of particles of mRNA sequence. But I don't know what those rod forms are. And that looks more like a debris-like particle to me. And again, it's not mineral. But yeah, they're clumping around a piece that's on there. And again, if I go up and down, it looks like we may be looking at it on edge, like it's more of a sheet instead of a rod.
Right.
And again, so that goes to the question of what other carrier agents are in here besides lipid. We sent some of these off for analysis and it'll be interesting to see. So here we have Pfizer. We did two vials. This is the first lot. It's interesting, these look even a little tinier than the Moderna did by a little bit. Now this is interesting right here, okay, just like we saw with the other, some of them are more elongated,
yeah.
A bunch of particles sticking to another particle in there.
Yeah.
Not quite as rod-like as the other that we were saying. Oh, there's one. Oops, past there. Yeah, that one, yeah. And again, there's another one floating by up there, kind of in a sheet.
We saw it in the Moderna. We're seeing it now in the Pfizer, these sort of rods or sheets.
You know, is it a chemical of some sort bonding together? You and I brought it up. I said, I wonder if that could be a graphene sheet, because they're two-dimensional sheets, a graphene oxide sheet.
Sort of like the images that I've been seeing. So I'm really looking forward to the mass spectrometry.
Yeah.
Seeing what that looks like.
Wow, I mean, it was what I think, just very generally speaking, as we looked at all the different vaccines, I think one of the conclusions that we came away with is it's just a hodgepodge. I mean, there were vaccines that seemed like they had no particles or anything, almost nothing there. It was almost like a saline shot. And sometimes we even had multiple, I think we had a couple of different Pfizers, and then the other one would be just packed with all sorts of things. And you just get this sense that the manufacturing of this is totally and completely inconsistent.
I agree 100% with that. And you and I looked at it together. Some were more concentrated, some were less. And that goes to the point, where are these being made?
Right.
Is the FDA inspecting each facility?
Yeah.
No. And these are being made around the world, and they were ramped up so quickly. And it is not good manufacturing process, especially something this quickly. And this is, as was spoken about in the hearing yesterday, this is a very unique brand new process, which they're using at a mass scale. So the inconsistency was probably a good thing for a lot of people in the sense that they may have
For those are now watching the high wire and you're out there and you're thinking to yourself, you know, this is a scary show, I want to say this. There's a potential that you didn't get anything at all. I really think that, I mean, I think that potential's out there. I don't know if it's on purpose. I don't know if they purposely put out saline injections, but what we could see is it's just some of it's probably settled to the bottom. Who got it first? How long? Was it thawed correctly? Is it totally destroyed because they thawed it way too early? All of that is in play here. So if you're healthy right now and you've made it through this, I think the message from yesterday's, you know, show is just don't do any more.
Stop. We're not here to judge. If you got one, don't get two. Don't get three. Don't get four. Yeah, just stop.
If you've gotten four and you're still doing fine, you're Superman, and we'd like to analyze you. Yes. Call Dr. Ryan Cole.
Yeah, we'll figure it out because and genetically, I mean, who's more predisposed to harm? Do people have predisposing clotting conditions that shouldn't be getting, you know, the shot? Nobody should get the shot now because it's to an expired protein.
Yeah.
But either way, yes, they're inconsistent lot to lot. And I shared this information with some colleagues, and I have some very esteemed colleagues overseas that went ahead and they are university level professors, had access to over 100 vials from three different manufacturers, different lots, and they went ahead and because, you know, we can look at it and suppose it's this or that. And there are, you know, bless their hearts, there are a lot of colleagues and scientists that take their medical school microscope and they're trying to, you know, they're curious and then they add to the literature, oh gosh, you know, the graphene this or nanobot that or scary parasite this. And so there's so many conjectures out there.
And to be clear.
And I admire that they have the curiosity, don't get me wrong.
Right, but to be clear, we were not able to answer all the questions looking through a microscope. One of them being, we were seeing this thing that we were calling a rod. It was interesting, and it's hard to see. It's hard to capture on the video cameras. But you would see like a rod, and then you would move it, and then it would sort of turn on. And all of a sudden, when you turn it side, you'd realize, oh, wait, that's not a, it's not a,
it's
a line.
Flat plate.
It's like a flat plate.
Right.
And that's where we're like, oh, is that... would that be the graphene oxide? We hear about this two-dimensional thing.
And
so images
here we have a picture.
Look something like this.
And so it looks like that, and it's fun to, you know, have a fantasy thinking mind. However, guess what? These are cholesterol crystals. And here's what's interesting. That spike protein is incredibly inflammatory to the lining of our blood vessels.
Okay.
All of us have a little cholesterol plaque on the walls of our vessels. But when you get that inflammatory process going, now those cholesterol crystals due to inflammation are broken loose.
And now they get cast off, free floating out
there. Yeah, and so look at this. Well, doesn't that look like microcircuitry and a self-assembling nanochip is what you hear online? No, it's just stacked layered cholesterol.
Wow.
It's just stacked layered cholesterol. And you know, am I just looking at that shape and saying it's cholesterol? Well, yes. But in addition, we'll have the big reveal here in a minute. But, you know, we looked at this with three different types of mass spec, six types of analytical clinical chemistry. And those studies were very revealing in what was there and what wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, let's get into it. Let's do what the mass spec shows. So these are your friends out in Germany.
Friends in Germany. And I sat down personally with them, went through, you know, their data sets, and so we kind of congealed the data from 100 into, you know, one presentation-like form.
Okay.
And what did they find? Well, they found...
Take me through it. Then we have some visuals.
What do we find? Right. Okay. Are there contaminants? Sure. Are there metallic particles in these? Yes. Aluminum, silicon, magnesium, you know, sodium chloride, calcium, titanium, iron, et cetera. Yes, they're contaminants.
And what is mass spec? Just for those of us that are, what does that term mean? Is it?
Yeah, okay, let's make this simple. Everything at an atomic level has a mass and a spectrum. So you literally have to destroy the sample, and then as it basically flames off, it'll have a signature for its mass and its color that it puts off.
Okay.
And so you can break one thing down into all the multiple elements that make it up. So it's a very special, expensive process and machine, and used in industry, used in lab medicine, to identify what are the constituent parts of something.
Okay.
And so it's like the gold standard in hormone testing. We use it. It's gold standard in all sorts of manufacturing industries, just to make sure something is pure. You can detect the impurities. Why are these other things within that makeup of that?
Got it.
Particle.
Okay. All right. So back to this.
Okay. So this one just shows they're contaminating metals. Now, it's interesting. A small study was done that showed if you took some fluid out of the vials with a pipette, took some out with a needle, some of these metals are actually coming from rapidly manufactured needles.
Really?
So they just said, let's do one with a needle, same
with formulation,
but just do it plastic, and they found metals in it that weren't in the plastic one.
Right, that were in the one drawn with the needle. So not only were these vials and these products manufactured quickly, think of how many billions of needles had to be made like that. And
they
made
cheap, they're flaking off or whatever. I
mean, where did they come from? Who made them, et cetera? Are they stainless steel or not? So again, science and medicine requires purity and inspection. And as much as everybody thought this might have been a good idea, well, now we're seeing basically the aftermath.
Yeah.
And there are things in there that you don't want in your body. I don't want those trace metals in me.
Yeah.
So those were in some of those. And, and in fact, all the manufacturers, contaminating particles in AstraZeneca, and I won't go over all the chemicals, but contaminating particles in Moderna as well, contaminating metals. So again, under the microscope, those who are looking at these, oh, what's this shape or what's that thing?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of those are the contaminants from the manufacturing process.
Because
think of it, you got an assembly line going zip, 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 and bottle after bottle after bottle, and lid and gasket and et cetera. And that's why Japan rejected them. They're like, wait, there's too much particulate material here that it absolutely isn't lipid nanoparticle and polyethylene glycol and mRNA, and so they rejected those. So that accounted for some problems early on, I think. Now, as the boosters have come out, I think they're more concentrated, and we haven't had the opportunity yet to get any of the bivalent vials, and I'd be curious to do a comparative at some point on those. So there's contamination, that's one thing we do know. But let's go to what's not in there, or what's in there in ratios that we thought might be different. So there's one on, one thing is polyethylene glycol, and that kind of protects it coats the lipid nanoparticle and protects the particle in the mRNA. There was a complete, across all these analytical studies and mass spec done.
And this PEG, by the way, just is one of the things that there is an allergy that exists to PEG. This was one of the concerns because it's in a lot of different products and things that we use out there. So wherever there's access to bodies, some people have developed an allergy to this. And it was one of the concerns of the vaccine, right?
Correct. And so that acute anaphylactic death that we saw in many patients, about 70% of the Western world, we have an antibody to it, which is a pre-primed allergic reaction to have that antibody.
Now, this is the stuff that people say it's got antifreeze in the vaccine, right?
It's in that, but that's propylene glycol. This is polyethylene glycol, but it's still put here to help preserve and protect the particle at cold temperatures.
Okay.
But, and it's not antifreeze from your car, so I want to dispel that myth.
Okay.
But it's added to protect the nanoparticle at cold temperatures. Polyethylene glycol, the ones we consume, you know, cosmetics and pill casings, et cetera, it's either topical or through the GI tract. We don't inject PEG into ourselves. So, I mean, to have, you know, a topical exposure to it is one thing and develop an antibody, but to inject it into the human system, that's not a good idea. And studies show, then this is the thing about polyethylene glycol, your most important cell, your Pac-Man cell, your garbage truck cell, that will eat an invader and then present it on its surface and then say, hey.
It's like your macrophage.
Yeah, your macrophage. Yeah. They say to your immune system, hey, I've got this little thing I gobbled up, I put it on my surface. Polyethylene glycol inhibits that process. So now the main cell that you want presenting an antigen and stimulating an immune response is blunted by polyethylene glycol in the system. So
it's getting in the way of the immune proper
the
immune
proper
response.
Immune response, yeah.
And so what did we see in these when we were looking at PEG?
So inconsistency is what we saw. So homogeneous polyethylene glycol coating, it's a mix of lengths of the PEG. And so if you get a bunch of them in some vials, that's going to be a lot more irritating. And so we saw consistent inconsistency in the batches.
Right.
So some vials had a lot of it, some had very little. And here you see inhomogeneous PEG coating. It has a short lifetime, which is good because now it's less harmful. But those thick, dense batches of different lengths persisting for a longer time, now you're going to mess up that immune response we were just talking about.
Right.
So that's concerning. And so, again, what we saw on mass spec is consistent inconsistency.
Okay. But harmful. These are harmful.
That's a harmful molecule. And here you can see, you know, again, graph lot to lot to lot to lot.
Totally different.
How much
just
is there?
All over
totally,
the map.
All over the map. So again, inconsistency in manufacturing, and and if you are putting a product into humanity, you want to know that it's going to be safe and effective. Well, we know that these aren't effective now. It doesn't matter if it's effective if it's not safe.
So let me ask you the million-dollar question. We've
sure.
got the mass spec back, 100...
Over 100 vials.
Over 100 vials gone through mass spec. Really the burning question for me, did we find graphene oxide in any of the vaccines?
Absolutely not.
None?
Zippo, zero, nada. None. And so those little flakes that we were seeing, those little lines and floating things, those are three things. Those are those cholesterol crystals we saw.
Okay.
And there's a cholesterol-cholesterine spike on some of these mass spec graphs. And Pfizer has a lot of salt and some sugars. Moderna has more sugar, a little less salt. And we're also seeing those little plates are also salt flakes and salt crystals.
Okay.
These cholesterol crystals and sugar crystals as well. And so at the end of the day, the mass spec showed that that's what it was. These vials have lipid content. They have polyethylene glycol content in varying ratios. Yeah. They have salts. They have sugars. They do have genetic material, and that's what was in the vials. And then, you know, some lots had some contaminants. So my main point is it's fun to conjecture what's in them, what's not, and you get all these red herring pathways that people are worried about or scaremongering about. There's lipid nanoparticle and a gene sequence that makes your body make a foreign protein.
Right.
Those two things are necessary and sufficient to cause harm.
Right.
And to get off the beaten path onto all these other things, sure, you want a pure product, but those are the two harmful things there. The lipid nanoparticle is hyperinflammatory and can be toxic to our cells. And when it was designed, these were made to be given once. Mm-hmm. And the studies on giving it two, three, four times aren't there in humans.
Right.
So the cumulative toxicity of the nanoparticle itself is concerning. More concerning is the more of this gene you get into your cells that continues to make a protein that has known countless side effects that, you know, we've talked about on other shows.
Yeah.
That toxic spike protein, that's what matters.
And that's what I found myself saying along the way. Is like, look, we're going to investigate all these things. I've been promising everyone that's watching this show, we're going to look into it. But we've already shown you enough mechanisms, the toll-like receptors being shut down, the potentials to have cancers, the antibody-dependent enhancement issues, the spike protein. It is toxic. It causes clotting all by itself without a vaccine, just in whatever delivery. So with all of that, yes, there may be other things, but I was saying, let's be sure that we are not overstating something we can't prove when there is so much right now that is in the scientific literature that can. All right, so to have a little bit more fun, if you will, there's been this idea that there's like an amoeba or an alien. I just want to show some of the images that we've sort of seen on this.
Right.
And it got a lot of traction. This crazy looking thing, at one point it looked like it was moving. There was a guy out, I think in Germany or Russia or someone that found another one. And you had a fairly, when I was in the lab, you had a fairly simple explanation for us, and you sat down the computer. Let's just do a computer search on what it is we're looking at.
All right, this one's fun.
So talk me through it.
All right, nature. We live in nature. Our environment is full of things. I recognize this right away as botanical. That's from the bottom of a leaf. You see it a lot on the bottom.
This is a stellata trichome.
Yes, stellate trichome.
Okay.
And stellate, star-like, and this is on the bottom of leaves, and doesn't that look scary?
If that appears in a microscope from a leaf, then this is what it
looks like
in your microscope.
So if you're doing microscopy in a living room, or you're doing it in a non-laboratory setting and environment, you're going to get all sorts of particulates in the air. Go home and put some tape on your windshield and put it under a microscope, and you're going to see...
Look at that one. It looks like an alien. You're saying that's just the bottom of this leaf.
That's the bottom of a leaf floating around in the air.
So,
and a lot of different leaves have that. And so... It's fun to conjecture, it's fun to look at things, but when someone is a classifier of things and that's their profession, it gets frustrating when people get out of their lane and say, look at these creepy things and scare people. And I'm like, no, let's go back to the science. If you don't know what you're looking at,
right,
say you don't know what you're looking at. And I looked at that right away. I'm like, oh, that's botanical.
Right.
Because I look at everything under the microscope. It's what I do.
You've done, what, hundreds of thousands?
500,000 patients. And then beyond that, you know, when I was a kid, I was looking at the onion cells and the frog cells and the pig cells and and going down the street, and, you know, having a, I'm a nerd. I had a microscope at home and a little kid. I'm like, okay, let's, you know, what does this look like? What does that look like? So understanding the patterns of light. So no, there's not parasites in these things. Let's dispel that. There's not graphene oxide in these. Let's dispel that. Yeah. And so sleep well at night. Those aren't in it. But be concerned that there's a lipid nanoparticle in a gene sequence that makes your body make a toxin. Do worry about that. That's what you should be concerned about, not all these other things, red herrings. And so that's why I wanted to do this with you, to dispel those. I did want to bring up real quick, going back to that fragments of RNA.
Yeah.
That's concerning. It goes back to purity of product.
Right, the fact that you have a whole RNA, but we're getting these
the broken ones.
Yeah, I mean that's scary to me. It's a Frankenstein piece of RNA. What's it going to do in
your
system?
That's the important thing, and the medical literature is replete with this. Short RNAs make shortened proteins. Not all of them are going to code for something, but some of them might, and it is absolutely a known carcinogen.
Okay.
And so we'll get into that in another show, I'm sure, as some of the studies advance. But that's concerning when they're giving you a product that they said must be 100% pure. The European Medicine Agency said, no, 50% is okay. And, oh, by the way, you don't even have to keep these cold anymore.
Well, there's a lot that we did. Obviously, we looked at the vaccines under a microscope. We were looking at the clots and analyzing them and looking at slides of them. But what happens if you just put this vaccine right into a drop of blood? Well, we did that with my blood. Take a look at this.
You know, there's this discussion of blood clotting. You've talked about it, that the vaccines appear to be causing clotting on some level. Is there a way that I could test to see if vaccines cause blood clotting while we're here?
Yeah, it would be interesting to take some blood and put it on a couple of slides and then put a vaccine on each one, see what kind of changes we could see. Do you have an idea of whose blood we might be able to use?
I might as well offer myself up for that.
All right. Dell, taking one for the team. I'll take you out to my phlebotomist and let's get some blood and give it a go.
That sounds good.
I will take that.
Perfect.
And we will go back to the micro lab.
This is the closest that I'm ever going to get to getting one of these COVID-19 vaccines in my blood, outside of my body.
I hear you 100%. All righty. So here we go. So here you can see I'm trying to put same number of drops in the same part of each slide. And that way we can focus on that one part of the slide, and it should be, you know, uniformly spread. Look at that. Holy cow.
It's changed immediately.
Didn't it?
Yep.
Holy cow. Instantly cleared. I've never seen anything do that. And I don't mean to sound sensational, I just, I haven't.
Never seen anything do that.
Nope, never seen anything do that.
Look at that.
Oh.
Wow, Pfizer, that's the Pfizer, right?
Boom, both of them. Look at that. You saw that, I saw that. Wow. That's unusual. All right, let's go take a look again. Okay, so we'll first take the normal one. This is the regular without anything on it.
Yep.
You can see little platelet clumps up in here throughout, and then a couple of white cells in the background. Yep. So that looks pretty decent. It's like you're gonna live forever, Dale.
All right, good to know.
All right, let's see what the Moderna looks like. So again, we'll start kind of out at that thicker edge first. We'll work our way towards should be the thinner portion of the prep. Question is, where'd all the cells go? Seriously.
They're gone.
Seriously. It pushed them back into a big giant clump over at the edged clump. And again, is that the charge on the particles? I don't know. But where we put that drop, there are no red cells there.
I was gonna say, as they come out, it's almost like they're you know, getting almost leather bleaching clear.
Bleaching clear, some of them are folded, and some are called, what do we call, crenulated, a little crinkled. But yeah, I mean, that whole edge is like bleached. So this is the J&J.
That's totally different.
Isn't it?
It's like a nuclear bomb went off.
Yeah, it's disordered, isn't it? And then there's a little more of that stacking, that rouleau here. And again, look at all this clumping here out on the edge of it.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, like you said, like a nuclear bomb went off, it just congealed it. And again, that's not spike, that's just the lipid nanoparticle. So these are becoming more spherical, and you're losing that donut in the middle of your red cell. What's happening here is slightly from the outside of the cell in, causing those cells to balloon up slightly, because now you got a subtle osmotic shift here. And all of these are supposed to be, you know, again, isotonic. These are supposed to be balanced with the pH of the body. You shouldn't be seeing, you know, this kind of reaction. It shouldn't be damaging to the cells of the body right away like this. So here's that first Pfizer, and these were the ones where we just put a drop on and the whole thing just cleared. But this is where all that fluid went. And again, like that J&J, just caused immediate dispersion and clumping. And those don't look very red to me either.
No.
Oh, and look at this.
Look at those little spikies.
Those are called echinocytes. So it instantly changed the pH interior. These are little blebs of protein on the membrane of the red cell, because the red cell has involuted, and then those proteins on the surface, they don't have room to go. It's like flattening a ball of some sort, and it's kind of all baggy, but you know, so all these little fingers, that is not spike protein. So that's another myth I wouldn't mind dispelling.
Well, I mean, it's crazy because it's done it to so many. We didn't see that on the other ones,
right? No, we didn't see that on the other ones. So that's fascinating, because that instantly changed the pH of the interior of the cell, and it caused a massive outflow of fluid from the interior of the cell, causing all that cell membrane folding. That's wild. And it was, I mean, almost instantaneous. And
it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. So that's wild. Those red cells are now non-functional red cells. Those aren't going to carry a whit of oxygen. And now your body has to decide what to do, and has an inflammatory reaction, because now it has to gobble those up. And then again, the comparative is, let's go back to the normal. Go out to the thinner edge. No spikies at all. So, you know, that's why you do normal control. So what this means is more science, more questions than answers.
We have a signal.
We have a signal.
Well, I mean, that was somewhat alarming. It was a lot of fun, you know, and just, I want to be clear that this is an instantaneous result that we saw. We don't really know what to make of it. I also want to point out that we put, you know, a few drops on, really just one of my drops of blood, diluted by the amount given throughout the whole body. Who knows if this ends up being, you know, I just want to sort of some caveats.
Yeah, no, a lot of caveats here. This was just playing. I had a colleague did this, and he said, don't believe me, just go repeat the experiment. I said, okay, and we repeated the experiment. And so a couple things come from this.
Yeah.
Some is the difference in concentrations that should or shouldn't be there. So to get cell changes because of the ionic shift, the pH, et cetera, it just means that these aren't, all of them aren't a balanced fluid. Like, you want something to go in, and it's not going to cause all those other reactions, but it is. And you know, when someone gets a very painful arm after the shot for several days, well, part of that's because of that, because this is an irritant in and of itself. This isn't making spike protein yet. You know, it could be some of your own natural blood sugars and antibodies.
Right, just to be clear, I want to remind people, this is an mRNA technology. It has to be inserted into a cell. It has to have time
to
then
step, right,
sort of for the cell to read that recipe, if you will, start creating spike protein and pushing it out on the outside of the cell. We're not seeing
that. We're not that part yet.
Let's look at these spiky things really quick. I think we we have a little B-roll of this, because I've also seen pictures that says, see, look, it turns your blood into a spike protein right away. I've seen that posted on that. Those aren't spike protein.
No, they're not. And I want to absolutely dispel that myth, because these are called echinocytes. Now, you'll see these in chronic kidney disease patients.
So if you were looking at this and you didn't know, I just put back, if I handed my regular blood and you saw this prolifically through my blood, what would be the diagnosis?
I would do some blood tests and check you for chronic kidney disease.
Okay.
A spike protein is going to be thousands of times smaller than that.
Okay.
Microscopically smaller, because it's on a virus. You can't see it.
So these proteins, this is almost like if I had a tent and a giant windstorm comes, my whole tent collapses. Like you said, the cell collapses and the poles are sticking out in every direction. These are the proteins that are stuck in a deflated tent, sticking out the edge, that makes it look spiked because it's no longer full and round and
protected. Yeah, it's a great analogy. Yeah.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with the spike protein there. That's
but
just
it
a
is alarming.
It's alarming in the sense that it's shifting the integrity of the cell. Now, where do those cells go once they're non-functional and destroyed? They go to your spleen. And my colleague and Dr. Burkhart in Germany has pictures of how much spike protein is being made in the spleen. So some of these cells that are either being destroyed or carrying it, that's where your red cells get recycled. Mm-hmm. And so it's fascinating to see, okay, here's damaged red cells, here's damaged white cells. Where are they going to be gobbled up and reprocessed? A lot of spike protein in the spleen on microscopic studies. So that's where a lot of them can go.
And if we, when we drop that drop and you just see that, just like it's like a nuclear bomb goes off, like I said, on that, if I dropped a drop of saline on blood, it wouldn't do that.
No.
It wouldn't do that.
No, and again, it just means it's at an irritating level, either ionically or pH-wise. And so it's instantly, in this case, dehemoglobinating those cells. So the hemoglobin is just wiped out, and that's why they blanched and bleached. So that just says many of these vials are just very, very irritating in their premixture when they come. So again, nothing sensational. It's interesting, fun to play with, brings up some questions. Again, it all goes back to purity and consistency of manufacturing.
Yeah.
And that's my bigger concern. They're inconsistent. Go back to the key point. I want to drive this home. They're going to try to do lipid nanoparticles plus influenza genes and plus RSV genes. And for all these other shots going forward, we already know that this was a failed, quote, vaccine program. They have a technology that's harmful. And as you heard me say yesterday in the Senate, human cells are meant to make human proteins.
Right.
Human cells were not meant to make foreign toxic proteins. So traditional vaccines don't do that. This is a new technology of the which many, many people have gotten it. And your body wants to make its own protein. Not a flu protein, not an RSV protein, not any other viral protein, not a SARS-CoV-2 protein. This platform is sufficiently proven to be dangerous that not only do the COVID shots need to be stopped, but the platform and these agencies that have taken upon themselves carte blanche to keep pushing this forward as though they've done 10 years of safety studies, they have not. And that's my biggest scientific concern. We see enough things already happening wrong that going forward, I think that's the message to humanity, to regulatory agencies, to government officials that are willing to step in and block, you know, regulatory corruption and allowing something experimental to continue going forward that is proven to be harmful and has no signal of safety.
Right. I mean, to me, this is, you know, just asking, when you look at this technology and where it was at, I know you know the history of all the products we've ever rushed onto the market. This to me is one of the most terrifying. I mean, I've said this may be the advancement of science in the future. It is, but it is spelunking into a place in our immune system we have never attempted to mess with before in a way we have no idea what the result is going to be. To see that of all the things we've ever rushed onto the market, you're rushing this one?
Right. It's a gene-based technology, and it went through the regulatory steps under emergency as though it were a vaccine. By calling it a vaccine, it went to this FDA vaccine committee. Mm. But as Dr. Weissman astutely points out in that Senate hearing, it should have gone through the gene committee, and that they should have looked at reproductive toxicity. They should have looked at genotoxicity, mutagenicity, et cetera, et cetera. They went through the wrong regulatory process.
And frankly, through a team of people that know nothing about
gene
therapy. So you know nothing about what you're looking at right here. You're looking at it like it's a regular measles vaccine. It is not. This is a gene therapy.
Exactly.
That is that. And Malone said multiple times behind closed doors on the stage, we stopped these gene programs multiple times. They've stopped in their tracks because we're causing too much cancer. We're having serious problems with this technology. It has been stopped for all those reasons. We should have been very concerned using it as a vaccine, certainly not rushed it. And instead, we put it in front of a bunch of really, you know, kindergartners when it comes to this technology that know nothing about what they're looking at, and they approved it.
It's truly been a wanton disregard for public safety. And those individuals that technically work for us are not working for us. And they should have put safety first, safety first, safety first. Yeah. As Dr. McCullough points out, we had the signal in February of 21 with enough people dead already that it should have halted right away. And with all these esteemed colleagues that I'm lucky to know now and learn from each of them, I think the collective knowledge and that hearing, I hope everybody watches it and shares it with friends, that hearing was enough that anybody with two brain cells to rub together would go, Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem. And to think, as Malone was really shouting from the mountaintops yesterday about, they are trying to take this truncated, rushed vaccine program of a product that did not properly do a safety study. We have hit that every way sideways and say, we're going to release all these new mRNA vaccines, flu and RSV and all these, every bacteria and virus that we can inoculate you for, we're going to build an mRNA technology because we can do it overnight. And we want to have it approved immediately based on the safety that was already established by the COVID vaccine. While people are dying of adult death syndrome, are having clots like we've never seen before, babies, all of it, cancer, all of it, which we cannot prove all of it, but there is something going wrong. And when we listen to Edward Dowd there, who's like just from the insurance actuaries, you know, going underwater because of the rise in all-cause mortality, all of this happening, and they literally want to fast-track a system where they can just start just banging these out like we don't need safety trials. It is, I mean, I don't know about you, I'm sitting here, you just keep thinking, I'm in sci-fi. This is a movie. This is a cartoon. How are real people acting like this?
It's a dystopian experience. And as you saw from these images, the cells don't lie.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's there in the cells aren't lying.
Right.
You don't have to
believe.
You've
got a spike in your brain. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
Now, somebody proved to me it's okay for it to be there.
Yeah.
Do some science.
Yeah, do some science. I agree.
Right.
And going forward, let's focus on humanity, on, you know, let's get back to normal for sure. Let's stop these programs. Let's continue to do proper science and not rush science. You know, that quote in the European Committee, we were working at the speed of science. Well, good science isn't rushed.
Correct. In fact, I think that's the most dangerous word to see in a sentence about science. We rushed the science.
And who was the Pfizer exec that just stepped down? Well, we were building the airplane while we were trying to fly it.
Right.
Good grief. And she was proud of that.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not what you do to your fellow human beings. And that's not what we do in medicine and safety. And
to my point, even if we somehow got dumb lucky and did not end up killing ourselves with this product that we built while we were flying in the air, if we keep building planes that we're all in while it's flying, we will not survive this. We cannot allow this to be the way we are doing science from here going forward.
Right.
You know, it is clear, I think, to those of us that are looking at this literally through a microscope, that this one did not survive this challenge. We did not survive. Many of us didn't survive this flight. But if you are in the brain dead space of thinking and sticking your head in the sand, at least imagine a world where pharma never does any safety trials anymore. And we just start, oh, because the president said so, here comes the next one. And flying the plane while we're in it, I don't think this species lasts. These are critically damaging choices being made.
That's why this platform must be stopped. I was an aeronautical engineering major. I'm going home on an airplane today. I trust that everything has been done and proven, and I feel very comfortable getting on that airplane. But with these things, airplane's still being built, and it's not going to fly well. And it's not going to bode well for humanity to make human cells into foreign protein factories with any of the ones going forward that they want to. That is not how we were designed or built. We were meant to be human, not to be, you know, transhuman or one of these conglomerations of some odd genetic combination of something that does not belong in our cells.
Well, Dr. Cole, it's an honor to know you. I know you are coming under, you know, massive pressure. This is affecting your livelihood, your business, your specialty. But I believe, you know, you're going to be a part of making history here. I don't think they're going to get away with this. And I think that we are really shifting this conversation, and we couldn't do without you. And I want to thank you for taking time out of all the incredible work you're doing to let us ask some of these questions that our audience has been asking. It's been, you know, very enlightening.
The honor is mine, Del. Thank you.
Take care.